Welcome to Tribecast. I'm Forrest Walden, founder and CEO of Iron Tribe Fitness. And on this podcast, I am going to help you find your tribe and maximize your life. Welcome back to another episode of Tribecast. It is my honor today to be joined by Mr. Fred Stokes. Fred is a Super Bowl champion with the Washington Redskins, had a long career in the NFL, and is up to a lot of really cool things in his life that we're going to be able to get into today. But first and foremost, you know, Fred and I share a couple things in common. One, believers in Jesus Christ, equally yoked as Christians. In addition to that, he really has a heart for men and creating community with men and safe space with men. And I just knew when I heard his story that I had to have him on. Tell you a quick story. He actually had the opportunity to come and speak to my kids last night. My kids are, especially my boys, competitive athletes, and he was gracious enough to come over and we assembled their basketball team to listen to what Fred had to say. And obviously they were in awe of this 6'5", 270-pound man in their living room. And I was tucking my 8-year-old into bed last night, and he said, "Dad, Mr. Fred said that when I stepped out on the court, I should tell myself that I'm the best player on the court." And you know what? That's exactly what I did. Well, he won that game, and he's in the finals tonight. So I think that's a really good message. I try to communicate that message to him, but it stuck when you said it, Fred. So, Fred, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Forrest. It's a pleasure to be here, man.
Awesome. I can't wait to get into our topic today. But start by just telling the listeners, if they don't know who you are, a little bit about what Fred is all about.
Well, first of all, Forrest, this is amazing that you and I have connected. And like you said, it's a really small world. And, you know, just meeting you and talking with you and now hearing your son share with you that just our brief encounter and just a few words of encouragement, that he took that to heart. And I'm glad it turned out that they won. I don't know if I'd have got the same grade. but anyway, yeah, so my background is I grew up in Southeast Georgia, went to Georgia Southern University, played football after only 1 year of high school football.
Oh, wow.
Played there at Georgia Southern, got a full scholarship to go, a full scholarship to go to Georgia Southern, and then got drafted by the Los Angeles Rams, stayed there 2 years. And then I left and went to the Redskins and stayed there 4 years, went back to L.A., St. Louis. I was in St. Louis in 95 when they became the St. Louis Rams for the first time. And then I finished up my career in New Orleans. And the crazy thing about it is I didn't play any defense in college, and I got drafted as a defensive end. So I always tell kids, don't get stuck on a position. You know, if you're an athlete, they'll find a place to put you. And so I spent 10 years in the NFL as a defensive end after having played offensive tackle in college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So from the offensive line to defensive end.
To defensive end.
So you had to be nimble as a tackle to move to end, I would think.
Yeah, you know what? And that's the other thing, too, that I share with kids is that it's great, and you're a good-looking guy. I can tell you work out. You can't see that on the podcast here. But trust me, listeners, he's a good-looking guy, works out. I tell kids that you have to be athletic, meaning you got to be able to move. You're not up there in a Olympic bodybuilding posing contest. You got to move. I remember one of my coaches early on when I had some doubts about my skill set and ability if I could play in the NFL because I wasn't the biggest at the time. I hadn't developed what I would eventually develop my muscles and got some weight. But one of the coaches told one of the players that I was really looking at, like, man, he's huge. And the coach told him, say, son, nobody's going to lay across your chest and say, bench press me. You got to be able to move your feet. Mm-hmm. And I was blessed with quick feet, and I developed them even more. So I tell kids, you know, as you said, use that word nimble. You got to have agility. You got to be able to move, and they'll find a place to put you.
They're always looking for athletes.
That's it.
Right.
That's it.
Okay, so you were in the league how many years?
I played 10 years for 3 different teams. I was a part of the Redskins when we won the Super Bowl in the 91 season. Just a footnote and kind of a question. I call it one of the I've got a brain lock right now, but the Redskins 1991 team was the considered the number one defense of all the Super Bowl teams that won. Mm. And they've done it, and you go, what about the Patriots or what about the Steelers who had a great team and all the other teams that won? They do it kind of like college when they go straight to schedule. We played the Giants, the Eagles, and Dallas, and those teams had winning records, and we beat them that year anyway. So we only lost two games that year. Oh, wow. On our way to the Super Bowl. We beat the Buffalo Bills after they had lost the previous year to the Giants. And I had a great game. I had 2.5 sacks. I like to say 3 sacks because I felt like I should have gotten the half. But 2.5 sacks. I had a fumble recovery and a cost fumble. So I had a pretty good game.
So tell me about that moment. Super Bowl champion. The game's over. The culmination of, you know, really just the body of work of your life, right? You're standing there as a Super Bowl champion. What's that like?
Man, it was amazing. First of all, my wife didn't get a chance to experience that personally with me. We battled back and forth about, you know, where would her that third trimester when pregnancy. Lance, my oldest son out of the 3 boys I have, Lance was born on the 5th of February. I think we played the Super Bowl on the 26th of January, so it was just too late in the pregnancy for her to fly. They did bring a Channel 4 that was in Washington, Channel 4 in Washington, brought TV cameras in my home, and so I was able to see my wife as I was doing some stuff up there. But man, let me tell you something. Playing in the Super Bowl, for me, was the ultimate. I mean, you play in a game, and football is football, sports is sport. But when I walked out of the tunnel and saw the crowd and the magnitude of what we were doing, and then I realized this is going to be seen all over the world. Absolutely. I got nervous. I truly did. But after we won, to your point, initially it was surreal. It was like, you know, people were hugging and confetti flying and I'm like, we won the Super Bowl. And I think it ultimately did not settle on me with the reality that we won until the next day in the hotel. And I'm walking through the hotel lobby. Someone is like, go Redskins, Super Bowl champions. And I'm like, yeah, we won the Super Bowl. We just did that. And I'm always reminded every year when I watch the Super Bowl that I have a Super Bowl ring. It's got 29 diamonds. It's a size 16. I don't wear it all the time. I wear it when I do, you know, speaking or something special, when I'm supposed to be a real celebrity.
Yeah, like right now you're wearing it.
Well, I'm in here with you, man. That's right. So I'm a real celebrity now. Uh-huh.
That's awesome. Well, so you played for Joe Gibbs.
I did. I played.
Legendary coach. I read his book. God, must have been in high school. Everybody's a Coach, I think was the name of it. But I always respected him. Give us a great Joe Gibbs story.
Man, I tell you, that guy is the real deal. when he signed me, I knew about his faith. You know, that was kind of front and center, that he was a Christian guy. I didn't mind sharing his faith with anybody. I knew that he was it's hard to quantify, but a player's coach. And it's almost when you say he's a player's coach, that you mean that guy understands the players. He's not just like a dictator. And so I heard all of those things from the surface. But when it really became real for me was myself, along with Daryl Green and Charles Mann and Art Martin and Tim Johnson and different guys, Mark Slareth, who's, I think, a commentator with ESPN now. But a lot of us would be in a room on Saturday night talking about life, our family, our aches and pains, and sometimes just complaining to each other about the life of an NFL football player. And one particular weekend, we were in one of the rooms and Coach Gibbs came in. And he came in not to tell us we need to go to bed. He came in to share his own weaknesses. He came in to share his own vulnerability and his shortcomings as a man. Like, hey, I'm just in here. I know what you guys do, but I want to share from the side of just happen to coach an NFL football team. I've got 2 boys. I've got a wife, and I have the same issues there about that you guys do because we're all men. Yeah. And I thought that was amazing for us.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That's a perfect segue because I wanted to back up. We went straight to NFL, straight to Super Bowl. I know that's easy to do, but that doesn't define you. And that's why you're on this show, right? There's more to Fred than a Super Bowl ring. So talk to me about your family, because you're a family man.
I am. I've got 3 boys. Lance, who's now 27 and married to my wonderful daughter, Lauren. They'll be married this May, 3 years. They live in California, out in San Francisco. Landon, our other daughter, second daughter, is Audra. I call her Audi. And she's amazing as well. They just moved. They've been married about 4 months. They just moved to Orlando, where we currently live. And Landon, he's an awesome young man. He works with he's a graphics designer, so he works with a company down there. And then Luke, my youngest son, is 25. And Luke is now, he works part-time with FedEx, and he just recently, as current as this recording here, he just got an opportunity to work with a logistics company.
Okay.
And so I've been married right now for 30 years. I had my 30th anniversary, about 2 weeks ago, February 5th to be exact.
That's awesome.
February 11th, Lance was born on the 5th. I'm excited about what I'm doing, my marriage, my wife, my life, and all the things that I have going on. So I've been blessed to have those three young men.
And they're athletes as well, right?
Yes. Lance is 6'7". He got a full scholarship to go to play basketball at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. Go Mocs. Landon's 6'5", and he got a full scholarship to play at Vanderbilt. He was an outside linebacker. He graduated in 2016. And then Luke is 5'9". So and he's probably, as you are, you probably a fierce athlete, man, and competitor. And Luke is the same way. And I would say he's probably out of the three boys, with hands down, he's probably the best all-around athlete because he could do it all.
Yeah.
Whereas Landon and Lance were more specialized in their sport.
And he probably had to work harder to earn it.
He talks about how his brothers tried to beat him up and all that stuff, and he fought. And to this day, he said they almost killed him. I'm just glad and blessed, man, that God gave me and trusted me with men to raise. And I didn't take that lightly. My wife and I talked about it. We homeschooled them for the first 8 years of their school life. We read a bunch of books. There's one out there that we read, Raising Up Boys, I think. I forget the author of that one.
Dobson.
Yeah, okay. And so we had that one. But I've been blessed, though, man. Been blessed.
Okay, so I want to take you back to the NFL.
Okay.
You were in 10 years. You actually had just signed a 3-year agreement, right? Mm-hmm. Biggest contract you'd ever signed. And a year in, you decided it was no longer for you. And I don't want to mess it up. If you correct me if I'm wrong on that, but take us through that process. That's a huge decision.
You know what? Partially, the other part of that, I signed a 3-year contract with the Saints. And I really had thought about it after I played in St. Louis, and it was my 9th year. The average lifespan of an NFL football player, and we're talking about the playing lifespan, not his life on earth, is about 3 years or less, really. And so I had 9 years in, and I'm thinking, man, I've been tremendously blessed. I made really good money. For the most part, I was still didn't have any major injuries. And then I got a call from the New Orleans Saints, and I signed a 3-year contract with those guys. And I thought, okay, great. I'll play this contract out. It'll take me to 12 years. Man, that's a really long career. And I'll see what happens from there. Maybe I'll play again. I went to training camp down in New Orleans. I was feeling great, feeling I'm flying around. I'm 10 years in the league, and I am balling. I mean, just having a great mini camp. And right before the season started, I hurt my knee. And I had to have knee surgery. So I went to training camp on crutches. It was the first time I had surgery on my knee. And it kind of rocked me a little bit. First, I started to look at my life and started to think, do I really want to do this? Almost like a guy being in the military or something. Like, do you really want to do what it takes to do at this level, to put out like that for the next 3 years? And I just came to a conclusion. I felt like God was speaking to my heart. And I told my friends, I said, man, I'm retiring. And I left money on the table. But I knew it was time for me to retire. And I thought about my family. There was money. The Redskins called me after they found out I was retiring and said, hey, we know you're retiring from the Saints, but we'd like to pick you up and put you on our ready list. And I turned them down, man, just because I knew in my heart it was time. And I was committed to my family. I said, I can go back and play for more money, but what if something happens and I get tragically injured? Now, and for the rest of my life, my boys may never know it, but I'll know that I went back for the money and I left them. And I said, no, I'm going home, so to speak.
Well, a 10-year career is nothing to sneeze at.
No,
right?
That's
a great career.
Yes.
And a Super Bowl ring.
Yes.
To boot. So
yes.
That platformed you really to do anything you wanted to do coming back, right? So catch us up now. What's Fred doing?
Once I retired, my wife got on to me after a few. Well, I guess she got tired of me being at the house. She had always been on me about going back to finish my degree, because when I got drafted from Georgia Southern, I was a recreation major. At that time, I was majoring in therapeutic recreation, which dealt with special needs kids and elderly adults. And when I left, she just stayed on me about going back and completed going. And I was like, girl, I played in the NFL. I'm good.
I don't need that.
But hey, if you're listening out there, no, college is not for everybody, but you got to have something that's going to help you get to the next level. And so I went back to Georgia Southern to finish my degree. I graduated with the degree in BS in recreation, which was transferred over to commercial recreation, hotel resort management stuff. And I started working in a technical college as a coordinator of a men's program, of all things. I didn't have a great relationship with my dad. My dad and mom never married. My mom gave birth to me when she was 15 years old, and he went into the military, and she, you know, did what moms do. She started pouring love into her first baby. And so all of those things, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm a coordinator of a men's program, and my dad and I didn't have a great relationship and all of those things. It was called the Georgia Fatherhood Program, and I was dealing with men that had child support issues, non-custodial parents. We had a few women in there for whatever reason. The courts just said the women had to pay child support, but we dealt with those, helped them become gainfully employed. Some of them just needed more education. Some of them had to get their license back, and really just giving them far as quality of life. And giving them value. And my office was located in the technical college. So when those men came in that college and then I asked them to go to class, there wasn't much apprehension because they were already coming to the college. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, hey, go over to that campus and they'll, you know, have some self-esteem issues about that. They were already coming to the campus. So the state of Georgia, they thought that out really well to put my office in the college. And then if they needed to take a welding class or truck driving or math, any class, they were already there. I did that for 2 years. And I started speaking in the process of those 2 years. And I was making probably about $1,500 to $1,600 a month after everything gets taken out. And
quite the haircut NFL career.
Exactly. And so I went to speak one week. I spoke for, I forget which group it was, I spoke for an hour. They paid me $1,500. I came back home. And it was pretty good. I was raw. It was initial speaking, but they paid me $1,500. And I came back home. I told my wife. I said, "Honey, I just spoke for an hour for $1,500. I work at the college for 30 days, and by the time they take out the taxes, I get about $1,500." And I told her, "This is the truth." I said, "30 days, $1,500. An hour, $1,500. I think I'm going to take the hour."
Pretty wise choice. Pretty good use of time.
Yes. Yes. So that kind of propelled me into speaking. I wish I could have said that it went from $1,500 up and kept going. It did not. I had to go backwards, and I started speaking, man, for $500, for $300. I just wanted to get out. I just felt like that's what God was calling me to do. And so I started speaking from that, and we progressed from there to really get me here where I am with you now. I still speak and travel all over the country. I've spoken to our military service men and women. I speak at conferences. I've spoken to churches and schools. I don't speak at elementary schools anymore. I used to because of the platform that we use. It's more in line with the middle school, I think, when I get a chance to share that, and high schools. But more so, I'm in a position now where I really have a heart for men. So that's where I am, and that's kind of where how you and I connected.
That's right. And I recently heard you speak, and I want to unpack the topic of that conversation that we had. Before we do that, tell us a little bit about your sausage company, because that's an interesting side venture you have going. I really loved the story about Harris Teeter and how just being a people person opened the door to selling a product you really didn't know anything about.
You know what? You asked that question for us, and I think now with social media that people are putting themselves out there to be something they're not, because technology can have you looking like a superstar.
That's right.
Right. And I really appreciate this dialogue and sitting here with you on your show. I understand now more so than I did then that God gave me a gift to connect with people kind of in an uncanny and indirect way. And I embrace that now. But the story is, when I retired, I got back home to Georgia, where I'm from, Vidalia, Georgia, sweet onion capital of the world,
yes, mind you.
And a friend of mine, his family had created a burger, a frozen burger, after, and they named it after their dad, and they called it Bubba Burgers. It's well known. It's all over the place now. Yeah. But I had never heard of it. And so he and I were talking, he wanted to connect, and he's like, hey, I'm going up to North Carolina. Why don't you ride with me? We can catch up on life, because we hadn't seen each other since college. And we go to a place, a store, Harris Teeter. Now, I knew Piggly Wiggly. We had Piggly Wiggly. We had Harvey's. We had IGA, Food Lion, different stores of that nature. But I'd never heard of Harris Teeter. We go there. He's the sales guy. He knows all of his stuff. He's officially a sales rep for his own company. He knew slotting fees, margins, whether the product was frozen or refrigerated. Way of package. I mean, he knew all of this stuff, the statistics of the product. And you would think that that's where you sell products. You got to know your product. But sometimes the product, and I say, is you. Because when, for people out there that's listening to this, I'm buying you. If I do business with you, you and I are sitting here for us because there's a connection. It's hard to explain. It's almost subliminal. And so I know my strength now is people. And so we're in that store. Edward starts to talk about all those things. And this guy shakes my hand as he's introduced to me. He goes, Fred Stokes. Oh, my. Fred Stokes, Redskins. And I go, yeah. And he says, oh, my God. And he starts calling people. And he's, you know, we're taking pictures. He actually gives the camera to the sales rep, my buddy. And now my buddy is not a salesman. He's officially a camera guy. So he's taking pictures. And I'm taking pictures with the meat manager. And one or two of the cashiers came out. And every now and then, he would talk about his product. Well, lo and behold, the conversation finished. They shook hands, and I'm kind of watching all this, but I'm over somewhere else with some other people while they're doing this. We get in the car, and he's just ecstatic. Like, oh, my God, man, what happened? And I'm like, he's like, you crazy, and you're funny, and all this. I said, yeah, man, you know me. And he said, and I said, hey, did you get the deal? He's going, man, what in the world? I said, did you get the deal? Are they going to get some product in this store? He says, yeah, they're going to get some product. I said, that's what you want, right? He goes, yeah. I said, well, you know product. I know people. And without even knowing it, Forrest, I didn't know what I was doing at the time, but I understand now and I embraced it. I am passionate about people. And that one deal or meeting or ride along to go to a Harris Teeter grocery store that I'd never heard of before, turned to a few years later, reconnecting with Edward, and I worked with a company called Advanced Foods out of Enoch, Oklahoma. And I traveled around the country doing just that. Meeting people, shaking hands, hugging, smiling, and kissing babies. And I did that for about 5 years.
And so eventually that led to you creating your own brand.
That led to me. I left that company and just my wife wanted me to be back home. And just like I did in the NFL. And I know part of your show is about that, man. But I'm big on my family, too. I love my three boys. I'm blessed. I'm thankful to God that he gave me a wife that could give 2 cents if I played in the NFL. So she was not overwhelmed because she married an NFL football player. And I'm so grateful for that, because if she would have been, man, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. I'd be somewhere in a ditch somewhere or something. But, you know, because of that, she was like, honey, if they can't pay you, because I was traveling all over the world and I was going, they had four regional sales reps that covered the world. And I would go into their territories and help them grow their business or increase sales or gain new sales to the military. I mean, so I'm like, they're getting all this money and I'm traveling to the territory. So it was just a lot of technical stuff. But anyway, I won't bore you with that. But my wife said, you got to come home, baby. They're not paying you enough. I go, okay, I'm home. And lo and behold, it seemed like a few months, this company called, said, hey, we know what you've been doing. Actually, I got connected from another extension from Georgia Southern, believe it or not. My builder and I play football together. So there's a lot of connections from that. And he connected me with this company and said, hey, how much would you charge us to if we make a product and you can put your name on it? You come up with the company. And I thought, excuse me? And they said, yeah, you know how George Foreman did with the George Foreman. George didn't make a grill. He just made a grill famous. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that Jimmy Dean didn't make sausage. I didn't know he was a country music singer till about when he died. And They said, yeah, like Jimmy Dean Sausage. He's a country music singer. He just made a sausage famous. And I thought, okay, we created a brand called Fred Stokes Foods, and that's our brand.
Okay.
We did that. It's Fred Stokes Foods LLC. I didn't come up with the sausage formulation,
mm-hmm.
but they put their sausage under my brand, and they create that product just for me. And so he's my co-packer. And we've gotten in Walmart stores, we went in IGA stores, we went in some Piggly Wiggly stores, we went in some in Orlando public stores. I mean, we was blowing up, and it just got to the point where I just couldn't manage it. And we scaled back, and now we're just in food service now in some restaurants
okay. In
Orlando and Southeast Georgia.
So. But again, your ability to connect with people is what drove that, not necessarily the product. So you've got all this stuff going on, but what stood out to me about you is the fact you've got a mission statement. Tell us what your personal mission statement is, no matter what you're doing.
Oh, wow. My personal mission statement is to positively enhance the life of every person I meet that will allow me. And so some people, you can talk to them, you can smile at them and hug on them and love on them, and they're just not going to give it to you. And for whatever reason, even there's a disconnect or some kind of imbalance chemically, but that's why I use that latter part that would allow me. So my personal mission statement is that, to positively enhance the life of every person I meet. And so when I go into that engagement with that thought in mind, I always say, if you're talking to Fred Stokes, you're going to be smiling. We're going to laugh. We're going to do something.
That's right.
And that's what I didn't know that when I went to that Harris Teeter store, Forrest. God just allowed me just to, as I continue to be obedient, and just follow the plan that even I didn't know I was following, you know, going back to college and getting a job at the technical college and then reconnecting with my former teammate. And, you know, I always say things happen for a reason. And sitting down here with you, man, I'm just kind of smiling and I'm tickled on the inside. Like, I'm sitting here and we're actually doing this.
Mm. Okay, well, let's talk about what I heard you speak on that really resonated with me was the fact that change is here. Change is at a faster pace than it's ever been in human history. It's a reality of what we experience, especially as men trying to create things and grow things. Like, we are gonna experience change, and the way we manage that is everything. So unpack that for me.
It's the guy who is mixing the Kool-Aid and he's telling you how great it is, and he pours you a cup and he says, here, drink. And you go, you're not going to have any? Oh, you go, no, I don't drink Kool-Aid. Well, why are you mixing the Kool-Aid and you're telling me how good it is and it's good for me, but you're not going to do it? And I believe that in God, over a period of time, has shown me that. I've moved a lot. I've had a lot of changes in my life. We now live in Orlando, Florida, and it's been about 10 years now, 11 years, but the first 9 years we moved six times. So every year and probably 13 months or 15 months, we were moving. Rather than fighting it, I've just decided to embrace change. And I understand now that because change is inevitable, it's unavoidable, and it's constant. And I'm thinking, okay, it's inevitable. It's coming. It's unavoidable for the most part, and it's constant. What do I need to do, man? I need to either change my location, die. I mean, as they said, nobody gets out alive. Everybody on the Titanic, for the most part, died. It didn't matter what their financial statements were. It didn't matter what their position in life were. With the few exceptions, they got on that boat, but that wasn't predicated upon their financial statement or their height and their weight and the color and all these things. And so when I talk about change, change happens now. Are you ready? I've made it personal. And so I kind of go back to my sports background, is that when I worked out for us with the mindset that says, when I get back to training camp, I got to make sure I'm ready because my teammates going to be ready. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to be that weak link. And so I do the same with my kids. I had to make sure that I was drinking the same Kool-Aid they were drinking. I was holding myself to the same standards they're holding themselves to. In business, I've had to do that with my wife and accountability. If I'm asking her to be transparent and honest with me, I've got to do the same with her. And that's been hard. That's really been hard. But I thank God that now I understand that. So when I talk about change happens now, are you ready? I come from that perspective that I can't avoid it. It's constant. It's inevitable. It's going to be here. And because I've taken on the mindset of that, my stress level is lower. Not that I don't have stress. Mm-hmm. It's just not off the charts.
All right. So talk to me about this threefold process of mind, heart, action. And that was great. I mean, that's so consistent with what we've been talking about on this show.
When I talk about change happens now and change takes place in basically a threefold process, the gateway to our heart is through our mind. And this show, I can say this. The Bible says, as a man thinketh, so is he. I tell my wife, and she used to get on to me. I don't like her to talk negatively. And she go, well, you can't, it's a fact. And I go, yes, it's a fact. But you can say it's raining without saying, man, it's never going to stop raining. Oh, really? It's never going to stop raining?
Is that really true?
Is that story really true? Is that story really true? And Forrest, I have my kids saying that. The world tried to balance it between, I've read books where they talk about the power of positive thinking. You know, they try to eliminate God and say, if I just think I can. Yes, if you think you can, you think you can. Mm-hmm. If you think you won't or think you can't, you won't. But that's not all, you know. And so when it comes to that, the threefold concept of change happening in your mind first and in your heart and then your actions, there's a lot of thoughts come in your mind. I mean, thousands of thoughts come in your mind and you kick them out. And I've got to the point where I don't want those negative thoughts to gain root. So that's why I do that. If negative thoughts come to my mind, I try to kick them out quick as possible. It's almost like my Taekwondo of kicking out negative thoughts, mm-hmm. and embracing the thoughts that are positive and reassuring, like I can win. My life has matter. Jeremiah 29:11 says, for I know the plans that I have for you, said the Lord, plans to prosper you and not do you harm. I embrace that. So when life is going bad, I go, well, God said his plan for me is not to harm me. So I know this is not his plan, even though I may be going through a bad situation. So having that positive thought doesn't eliminate the change. I just embrace it even more. So once it comes to your brain, your mind, then it's fighting to get to your heart. Because that's the second phase of it. Because once you get to your heart, people get married because they're passionate about each other. You don't walk into someone and go, I'm going to marry you. Boom, and they get married. Those do not last.
No.
At all. And I heard someone say, I was reading a concept, and they said, can you name the exact, how long have you been married?
19 years.
19. Can you name the exact moment, the day, the second, the hour that you truly fell in love with your wife, where you would die? No,
I can't.
But it happened.
Slowly but surely.
Yep. And then that moment where it just triggers. And I think about those things, that there are thoughts in my brain that comes to my mind and it's fighting to get my heart. And once it gets there, man, I get emotional about it. And once you get emotional, people don't go into a room or a school, and we've had school shootings lately. That don't happen automatic. There's been a process that those kids have been thinking about it. They've been thinking about it. They've been internalizing it. And then it gets to their heart. And then they start to plan for it because they get emotional about it. And they blame all kind of reasons. But still, you can get emotional about something and it doesn't harm anybody. You can get emotional about somebody and you don't cheat on your wife. You can get emotional about something and you don't steal and you don't lie. But if you don't correct that and have some accountability, because it's still fighting, that thought that came to your mind that's now in your heart, it's fighting to become reality. And once you do that long enough, it becomes an action. And that's where because I heard something. I didn't share this today. I heard a guy said that he was in a courtroom because he robbed a bank. And right before the sentencing, the judge asked the guy, say, sir, do you have anything you want to say? He said, yes, Your Honor. I just want to say that for years I rode by that bank and I thought about robbing it. And I looked at it and I thought about the consequences and thought about my family. And he's going on, and the judge interrupted him. He said, excuse me, sir, I need to interrupt you. Just let you know, you're not on trial for your thoughts and your passion. You're on trial for your actions. I can't do anything about your thoughts and your emotions, what's in your heart. Mm. But once you rob the bank, sir, that's why you're on trial. Sit down. And so that's the way I look at actions. And I just try to kick out those things as quick as possible.
Well, you know what's great about that is it works both ways. You can use the power of head, heart, action for your good, or you can use it for your detriment, right? And here's the thing. We don't know what's going to happen in the future, right? So any story we create about the future is a story because we don't know if it's going to happen. So we might as well be creating a future that's compelling, right? Talk to me about that.
Man, that's powerful. It's like the internet. It's like social media. It's a great tool, but it definitely can be abused. Food, it's great, but as you work out and you seem to be consciously aware of your intake of your body and those type things, to me, it can be. And you can be obsessive about anything. I think it can be, because here's what I think is that, and I can say this, right? Outside of God, and that's my true north for us. That's what keep me focused. That's what keep it from going to the point you're talking about. To be honest with you, that's what keeps it from going left.
Got it. Okay, so let's transition a little bit. I want to hear, this show is all about having it all, cross body, beam, balance, business. You are at the height of your career in the NFL. You've experienced massive success, but we also know the stories of NFL careers that were successful and then a year and a half later they're broke, or they're on drugs and alcohol, or they're burnt out and have no purpose because their purpose was their identity, right? And they lost their identity. You've been able to transition that, and now you have this purpose that's, it's like a guiding star. You're never going to reach helping everyone on earth, right? So you can pursue this mission the rest of your life,
yes.
Right? Talk to me about, I want to start with balance. You've been married 30 years. You have three kids that are obviously doing well, walking with the Lord, growing. Like, just talk to me about what it takes to be married for 30 years and to raise three men.
God gave me three boys like toys, and there was a little note in the box said, add batteries and tweak. Don't mess this up. So, I mean, my boys, really, they came to me, and they've just been great from the jump. My wife actually left for 4 days. I think we had been married for 10 years or so, and she left me because I was arrogant and knuckleheaded, like we can do. Well, like me, you're probably a great guy, but knuckleheaded, and I let her leave, and I'm in this big old house by myself, and I knew my dad didn't marry my mom, and when she left, man, I cried. I mean, I literally cried. So we've been through some stuff. The way we've made it, to talk about our relationship first, in that 30 years, we had other couples that fought with us, man. Mm-hmm. One of my best friends, about your size, height wise, and he's about your build too. He's one of my best friends. He's a retired state trooper now, but Rod got in my face, and he wasn't afraid to tell me the truth, and to the point where I was even like, "Hey, man, you need to get my face now. Come on now." Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Nah, bro. Nah, we're staying here at this house because you're wrong. You're wrong. You need to tell your wife." I'm like, "Dude, did you hear what she told me? I don't give a crap, man. You were wrong." I'm like, "Are you serious?" "Yes, we're going back in here." And they fought with this. We had one couple come to our house, a friend of ours. We still friends now. They would not leave our house for us until we did communion. So we have people to fight with this, and I've had men to fight with me. And so that's how I've made the 30 years of marriage. And that's really how I've been able to, you talk about raising boys. I've had to be honest with myself first. As we said, put your mask on first. I've had to do a self-assessment, look in that mirror and say, "Hey, bro, your junk does stink. You're not all that. You might've been a pretty decent athlete, but you're not all that." And once I was honest with myself, I'm talking about blatantly honest, I've shared with my boys that I did marijuana. I mean, I probably smoked 100 acres of dope. I didn't do heavy drugs. It's like an excuse now, but drugs are drugs. I drank and drove. I told my boys about that. I had sex without condom. I said, "Guys, it's not like I was so good. It's just that God didn't allow me to have any kids. God didn't allow me to kill anybody while I was drunk." I said, and then nobody laced anything like some kids have done I knew of with marijuana, putting other crazy stuff in it, and I still have my right mind. So I open up and share those things. And it may be crazy. It may be unorthodox. But I thought that was the best way for me to do with my kids, because I'm 6'5", at that time I was 280 pounds when they were coming along. And I know, I just felt like God just sensed to me that my kids could see that, man, Dad's invincible. He didn't have any mistakes. If I can, I want to share this. When Lance, my oldest, was about 13 years old, we sat on the porch out in the country, and we're looking at our pond down. And the pond is about 5 acres, and we're sitting on the porch, and I told Lance, I said, Lance, I just want to let you know your dad is not perfect. He's like, I know, Dad. You know, yeah, he's listening. I said, no, seriously, I'm not perfect. I said, Lance, there are some times that I want to tell your mom I'm going to the store, and I want to get in my big truck out here and leave and never come back. He said, really, Dad? I said, yeah, son. I said, life is tough, and I don't want you to get it twisted and have this fantasy ideal about life. I said, but I've thought about that. I'm not going to do it. I said, and I've thought about times maybe going down to that pond and putting something around my leg or my body and jumping in so I wouldn't come back up. Mm. And when I said that, for he was like, for real, Dad? I said, yes, son. And I said, I just want you to understand, when life hits you in the face or you get to a point where you can't manage it, just trust God, because that's what Dad does. And he said, thanks, Dad. And I hugged the man and we prayed. And that's the way I've been with my kids. And that's how I'm, and it's just by the grace of God.
Well, Fred, I mean, that's the core of this show. And that's tell the truth. Be real.
Yeah.
Don't hide. Expose your junk and do it with a group of men that are like-minded that'll hold you accountable. So perfect segue. You and I were talking today about, I just came off a 2-day accountability retreat where I can, there's 5 men who know everything about me. There's nothing to hide, right? They're going to ask me tough questions every time I get with them. And you said, yeah, that's my Lent group. I said, you're what? So talk to me about this concept of a Lent group.
It is Lent. It is L-I-N-T. I lead our men's ministry at our church, and periodically I would talk to our guys, and I would share with the guys that you need guys like your guys, where you have an accountability group. And so as I would share, I said, guys, I'm saying you got to get with another guy that would tell you your junk don't stink, where you can expose all of your stuff. And I would just, as I'm talking over time, and these were different meetings, and I would just say, hey, man, you got to get down to the pot. You got to get all the stuff out your pockets. You got to get down to the Lent. And I just go on with that way. And then one day it hit me, and God just gave me the acronym, because this is the life I never tell. And that's what Lent stands for, L-I-N-T, life I never tell. Mm. And I said, every man, no matter who he is, no matter what his status is, no matter what his position is, no matter what his income level is, needs a Lent brother. A brother that he can get down to the Lent, where he can pour every bit of the content out of the pockets of his life. Not his natural pockets, because just like in our natural pockets, the Lent, I don't care how much you pull them out, you can look down and pull the pockets inside out. And in the very crevices is Lent. And guess what? It's in our life. In the very crevices down deep. And sometimes you have to dig. It's there. That's the life I never tell. But that's the part that kills you. Think about it. When you put laundry in a dryer, and that's why they have a Lent catcher. And those things have been known, especially in the past, if they build up a lot, they'll catch fire or they'll cause something bad to happen. If you get enough Lent in your pocket, bro, of your life, something bad going to happen. And so now, man, I've been talking with a couple of friends of mine. I've got a Lent brother. I've got 4 guys, actually 5 guys that I can call on that know my stuff. And I'm talking about every single thing about me and vice versa. And so that has really propelled me to the next level. I used to be, and I'll just say this, man. I was addicted to pornography. I had a friend of mine. I told him, I said, I've never been on crack, but I know what a crackhead feels like because I've stayed up all night on my computer just clicking. One more site. And I had my kids too. And so I was afraid, man, as I started to come out of that darkness, to even take my laptop on the road when I was speaking or turn the TV on. But what helped me was having a Lent brother to talk about the life I never tell. And this is not about hiding, keeping secrets, as you know, with your guys. But I would get to that hotel and I would call one of the guys at the time and I say, hey, I'm just getting here. I got to get checked in and I'll hit you back after this. Or I'm getting checked in, but I got to go to a meeting. I'll call you when I get back to the room. And that was just accountability. And you can say what you want to. You can say, hey, man, I don't need nobody keeping tabs on me. Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
Because here's the thing I know. And I'll say this and I'll let you switch back. If you are talking to a man and he does not have an accountability group or somebody that knows all his stuff, he's dangerous. He's dangerous to himself and to those around him. And I said, as military guys, you don't have a guy going out on an unknown territory on a recon mission by himself.
That's right.
They didn't call it SEAL Team 1. It was SEAL Team 6 yes. for a reason. So that's the long version, but that's now, where it comes from for us.
It's amazing. I actually want to camp out here for a minute because I want to ride this analogy because I like it. All right. The lint, if left unchecked, can catch fire and burn you down.
Wow.
And so if I hold on to my lies and I pretend that everything's okay and I put this posture out there that, hey, you know what? I'm a successful entrepreneur. Don't worry about these areas over here. Yeah, me and my wife aren't getting along. When the truth is, we're at wit's end and I'm ready to leave her. Or yeah, me and my kids don't have much of a relationship. When the truth is, I can't even pull myself away from work long enough to engage with my kids, right? And I bury all that stuff to think that it's going to just continue to be whack-a-mole.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's never going to catch me. Is a lie straight from the devil, right? Yep. Those things are going to blow up, and all the success, whether it's NFL football or growing a business or whatever you're chasing, is not going to mean anything when these things blow up in your face. It could be your body from drinking or from overeating. It could be in your marriage. It could be because you don't have a connection with God. So I just love this Lent, and I love the analogy of it really causing fire in your life.
Well, you're taking it to another level too, and not that I even thought about it to that point, but as you're talking, it's like every forest fire, and we just had one of the biggest forest fires in our history out in California. Burned up thousands of acres, people lost lives. It started with a spark, and if they could have put it out earlier, to your point, it wouldn't have caused that damage. And you think, well, I thought the couple were very happy. Yeah, but he's hiding something. There's lint in his life and it keeps building up. And once it catches fire, I mean, fire doesn't care. It just it is unconscious and it just ravishes everything in its path. And once it gets so huge, you can't put it out. Sometimes you just have to let it burn out. And to that point, there was a point in my life where I felt like, to your point about catching fire, I felt like I wanted to put this out before I was exposed. Mm. And that Lent, and I said, God, you've got to send me somebody. It really happened. I was traveling. A friend of mine, one of my Lent brothers now, we were just talking, and it built up gradually. I met him when we were playing with the Rams. As a defensive line, we would meet together, hang out together, go to each other's houses. And it kind of just happened. It wasn't structured, wasn't organized. Hey, man, you're going to be my best buddy. You can't walk up to somebody and say that you don't know. Hey, man, I need a Lent brother.
Yeah, that's right.
You need a who? I got a Lent brush. You know what I'm saying? you've got to have a community. And so we kept talking, and he and I talking in defensive line. And after I got out of the league, he lived in Atlanta. I'm flying out of Atlanta. He and I still talking. Our families would talk and get together. And one day he's talking to me, and he says, out of the blue, because I needed this for us. I needed it in the worst way. He says, hey, I got something I need to tell you. I need to share with you. And if I hear it again, I'm going to kill you. And I started laughing like, really? And it was silent on the phone. And I thought, okay. He shared it with me, and it was major. But I was like, okay, I was praying, like, God, help me with this. Let me know what to do. And I said, I got it. I said, hey, man, I've got something to share with you. And if I hear it again, I'm going to kill you. And we started laughing. But in the midst of that laughter, I knew that God had given me somebody the life I've never told and I was afraid to tell, and that Lent that was piling up to where it was going to be a huge blaze and my kids were to burn up, so to speak, my wife, it would have been devastating. Mm. Now I've got a release, and I share it with him, man, and he and I have grown. And over time, God has let me know that I didn't create you to be by yourself. I created you to be with other brothers, as he said in the Bible, iron sharpens iron as one man sharpens another. And we get dull.
Yes, we do.
Life has a way of dulling us, man. So that's my son, Landon, actually created a logo for me. You can't see it on here in the podcast, but I'll show you. But we have lentbrother.com. We're forming, I'm thinking about really trying to do something of this nature and even do a 501c3 maybe in that, because last year I witnessed either directly or indirectly probably about 10 men that I knew committed suicide. Mm. And it was because in one case the wife actually said, she actually, and these are high network guys, she actually said to my friend, and I knew exactly where the guy lived because he lived out near me. And so he said, his wife said, I just wish you could have had somebody to talk to. I'm thinking, is that all? Like he needed somebody. So it just bothers me when I see men that says, I don't need anybody or I'm good. No, you're not.
I think it's one of the tragedies facing men in this nation or in this world right now. And, you know, you said something that reminded me, especially in the context of relationship. It's always interesting to me when someone gets a divorce, and at my age, 20 years in, we're seeing a lot of divorces, and it's sad. But typically, when you look at the social media feed, it's happy, beautiful family, happy selfie, I love you so much, oh, honey, boo, boo. And then all of a sudden, the next post is, dear Facebook friends, me and so-and-so have decided to end our relationship. We appreciate everyone being supportive of this. So you're like, what? Like whiplash.
Yeah.
How did you go from this perfect family to, and then you have people cheering them on. Yay for your boldness. And we're so glad you can separate peacefully. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
We need to fight for this marriage. And so to the Lent process, if that man, that woman, that couple had an opportunity to have another couple in their face saying, we're not leaving this house till we resolve this and have communion, that's where marriages get restored. You restore a marriage, you restore a family, you restore a family, you restore a community. Like, that's where real change happens.
Yes.
So I hope you start this ministry. I know you have it. Like, whatever you have in mind for it, I hope you run 1,000 miles an hour in that direction, because I think it's needed. And that's certainly what we're about here on Tribecast.
Where you're sitting here is speaking volumes to me, to say, Fred, because what you're doing when you talk about balance, body, what is balance, body, business,
and being
in fitness, right? You talk about balanced body in body lifting. They talk about symmetry, right? You see these guys and you've seen them, how they walk into the restaurant, they got the little cutoff shirt and their chest is like yay wide, and then they have those
little teeny tiny legs.
You're like, hey bro, don't forget legs day.
It's called squats.
Yes. and another thing, one of my good friends told me too, and you talk about in that same concept of a body being business and
balance
is that in sports, you working out, you got all these weapons, and we would tell ourselves, hey man, rest is a weapon too. Because people want to just work out. You go, hey, rest is a weapon. And so to that point, I'm loving this. And so I'm telling you, far as I'm encouraged, thank you for having me on the show too, man, because, I'm going to be listening for it. Not just my session. I want to listen to this, because I think we need this, because just like in the weight room, when you're out of balance, they got people, even doctors, we in the NFL, we had, with chiropractors to kind of realign guys. And I think this is what this is in life. It's like some people just, they may not be far out. They may not have a ton of lint in their life. A man may just say, hey, I'm not staying up all night looking at porn. I'm not, you know, doing this, and you can categorize it. But bro, you got some lint in your life. You're out of balance. You may be great in your body. You may be great in your business, but what about your being? So this is, I'm excited, man, to be a part of this, and I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to share.
And if you think you don't have any lint, then you have some humility issues, and someone needs to call you out on that.
That's right.
Like, everybody's got their stuff. I don't care where you are.
Yes, every man has it. If you have a pair of jeans on, if you have pants on and they have pockets, I don't know where the lint comes from, but here's what I do know, and I do know where the lint comes from. It comes from the material. It's in the material, right? And so in life, when you say life, I never tell, where does the lint come from? It's a part of our being. It's a part of who we are. This sin nature says, well, where did it come from? because we're in a sinful world. Fighting against being a sinful state is the fact that I fight it every single day. Every single day I have to say yes. Every single day I have to choose, because I will never reach perfection, not on this side.
Man.
And that's where it comes from.
That'll preach right there. Yeah. That's a good word, brother. All right. So in closing, first of all, I just thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
What would you say to the man or woman who's listening right now who doesn't have any kind of limp accountability in their life and they're wondering, where do I even start?
Wow. I think it says what you said. I think the first thing they need to do, if they need to sit down and not only listen to this podcast, this particular one, but the rest of them that you've done and you're going to do, because you've got me thinking on that side as I think about Lent and a guy that likes to still work out. I think about that, and it's a fourfold process, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's being, it's body, it's balance, and it's business.
That's right.
And so now you've got me thinking about that. So I'm going to be writing that down to make sure, okay, where am I in all of these? Because I can get so busy that I forget to work out. I don't want to get too busy that I forget my being, right? And I tell my sons sometimes, I say, hey, if you take care of your business will take care of you. And so, and balance, I want to make sure that all four of them are getting their due attention. And so, that being said, too, with Lent, I think if I'm speaking to a couple or I'm speaking to a guy that's listening to this, the first thing I would say is, don't run up to somebody and say, I need a Lent, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go run to the weight room and say, I want to start working out, because the next day you're going to be sore as heck and you're going to not want to do it. I would say it's got to be gradual. You got to first get in the community. First, you got to be either, if you're not in a church or a group of guys, and just start listening. Maybe you can just start talking about easy stuff. I got a dog. Hey, you got a dog. What type of dog you got? Hey, I like dogs. Or just an on-ramp gradually. And so that's the way it happens. And then as it does happen, I would sprinkle something out there and maybe share something like, hey, Forrest, something simple that I'm okay about finding out. And then if we get together with somebody else, or I go with somebody else and they say, yeah, Forrest told me about how you lost your dog. I told Forrest not to tell anybody because I was crying.
Mm.
That was easy. Now I realize, okay, I may can't trust him.
That's right.
So, you know what I'm saying? So it starts that way.
Yeah, so I teach a lot of goal setting workshops. Mm-hmm. And what I always teach people is, once you've set your goals, you need to share them.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to be careful how you share them.
Yes.
Because you only need to share with goal setters.
Okay.
Because people who don't goal set, they're the ones that tell you, you can't achieve that. Who are you to think that you can do that? Mm-hmm. So be very careful who you share your goals with.
And you said only do it with who now?
Goal setters.
You only share their goals with goal setters.
That's right. So if I have an accountability,
you
got
to send that one to me.
I'm
just asking for that. Only share your goals. Now, if you hear that somewhere else, you go, I said that. I'll give you definitely credit.
Yeah, hey, there's nothing new under the sun. Yeah. I assure you.
Only share your goals.
But when it comes to an accountability partner, I mean, there's a couple levels in my life that I'm very selective about who I work out with.
Okay.
You better be serious. You better bring it. No chit chat. We're here to work,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But an accountability partner, that is going to be a very high bar.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about mixing the Kool-Aid. They better be drinking it. They better be funneling it before I'm sampling it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they got to, what we call in my business, live the code. What we say is what we do. And then they've got to be committed to telling the truth.
Okay.
Because if they can't tell the truth, I can't tell the truth. And that's a very, very high trust relationship. So to your point, you can't just walk up to someone and say, hey, let's be accountability partners.
Well, let's use that. Let's say you and I work out together. So the only way we know each other is maybe we work out together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So because you've got your family, I'm doing some other stuff, and we meet three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Well, I know, man, I'm looking forward to meeting together. And I may come show up one day and not my lively self, and you go, hey, Fred, what's going on? No, man, I'm good. Let's work out, man. Let's crank this music and let's work out. You go, you sure, man? We can talk. You go, no, let's work. And we work out. Well, I come back again and you go, hey, man, you're better. So everything worked out for you? I don't need to know, but it worked out. But here, I'm here to talk if you want to talk. And so we've already got a common bond working out. We both love working out. Now, to me, that's a springboard and a platform, not for you to just jump all in my business, but to just say, hey, man, and you may even say, if it's from a Christian point, you may say, hey, man, I don't know what it is. Don't need to know what it is, but I was just praying for you about it. I'm like, wow, these guys want to, hey, man, I appreciate it. And then I may come back and say, hey, Forrest, I appreciate you, man. I don't really want to feel comfortable sharing, but I'll just tell you this. Man, it worked out. You must have been praying, bro. Yeah. You know, hey, let's get this workout on, baby. Crank this music. That's how it happened. Yeah. And we just keep meeting. And next thing you know, something happens again. You go, hey, man, can I share something with you? And I just don't want you to tell anybody. My dog died and I cried, man. Hey, bro. I mean, I cry when I watch Old Yellow, you know, or something. But it's that simple for us. And that's, again, it's kind of on that same concept, which now I love acronyms and little phrases like that. You only share your goals with goal setters. I'm going to share my business with somebody that I feel like I can trust. And if I'm always sharing and you're never sharing, there's a problem.
There is.
Yeah.
And one thing I love about what you just said is when you're that type of person, you're the guy that's going to get the call when the lint catches on fire. And they don't know what it is, but you know what? I feel like I can confide in Fred. And now you're a safe place, right? Yes. And you can build that relationship. And essentially that's disciple making, right? It's doing life on life with other men. And so, guys, if you're living in isolation and you don't have another man that you can reach out and share life with, I just, with everything in me, I know Fred would second this, I just encourage you to start a group where you guys can be real. Find one that you can start with and just be honest. And I'm going to close with this. Sharing your junk seems like the scariest thing in the world. I promise you, it's probably easier now for Fred to just share that he struggled with pornography. But I bet the first time you said it, you thought, man, my wife's going to leave me. You thought all these horrible lies.
Well,
right?
I didn't, because everybody else looked like they had it going on.
That's right.
The guys
are probably the only one struggling with this.
Man. And so it was like, who can I tell? Because when I talk to guys, Forrest, it's like, especially in the business world, I mean, you jumping and, hey, let's get a cup of coffee. You're doing great. Hey, man, I just scored this. I just did that. And I'm sitting here going, hey, man, you didn't get any sleep last night. Oh, yeah, it's been a busy week for me. I can't say I stayed up all night, man. Mm-hmm. So you're right. I mean, it was. But I was screaming on the inside, man.
That's right.
I was screaming for help.
And so when you finally did it, is a release of like, man, I've been toting around this 1,000-pound backpack of guilt, shame, and fear, and to confess it, right? There's something powerful about confessing our sins one to another. Of
yes.
course, we've got to confess it to God. But one to another, there's release, and we can now be real. And the fact that you confess it, now I feel safe to, hey, man, me too.
Yes.
You too?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. And so as long as that doesn't become a way that we prop each other up and say, well, we're both bad. We're holding each other accountable.
Accountable. Because when you pull the lint out of your pocket, there may be something, and I didn't say this earlier, but there may be something I say, Forrest, listen, bro, you still got that chapstick? Man, I told you that stuff is toxic. Yeah, man, but I can't find it yet. Dude, I'm telling you. Well, we need to get rid of it. No, man, I'm going to get rid of it. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Get rid of this pen here because this pen here is going to jack you up. All right. Okay. We're going to get rid of that. But, bro, I'm just telling you, man, but you can. So I may let you keep it, but every now and then I'm like, hey, man, what's up with that chapstick you get? I mean, not to hound you about it, but, bro, you know it's toxic. I mean, they showed in the news two people already. So that kind of stuff. Hey, man, you still watching that, man? I'm just telling you. So I still, we don't need somebody that's going to pound us about our issues, but I also don't need you to be somebody that's enabling me either.
That's right.
Oh, dude, I understand. It's okay.
Me too.
Yeah,
not that big
bro.
A deal.
And now we're having a Me Too crying session, and then we get back and go, hey, bro, let's do it. But we're not getting any better. We're doing it, but we're not getting any better. So anyway, that's a sidebar. But this is so good, man.
Man, this is a good message men need to hear. I mean, it's providential that we ran into each other today. I got to hear you speak. And again, thanks for coming on the show. And how can we follow what you're up to these days? You're on social media?
I'm on social media. I've got a Facebook. My name, Fred Stokes. I've got Fred Stokes Foods. You can see that picture. It's a picture of me in one of my Fred Stokes Foods shirts. I also got Fred Stokes on Facebook. That when you type in that, you'll see me in my NFL jersey. Mm. So you know it's official. I do a radio show on Sunday mornings,
okay.
10 a.m. to 11 a.m. It's a local Orlando area, which is our market. But because I do on social media, you can see it on Facebook. Very good. You can actually go and see some of my old shows, and you can reach out to me. You can Google me and connect with me. I feel like this. If God put us together, either I can connect with you or I may connect somebody else with you. But we're not going to leave you out there by yourself. We're not going to leave you out by yourself because I'm telling you, I'm going to this. You've got another fan. You got somebody else in the audience to listen to this, and I'm going to be following you.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, again, thank you for joining us. Very valuable conversation, Fred.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
So what a treat it's been to have Fred on the show. I look forward to speaking to you guys next week on Tribecast. I'm Forrest, signing off.